You filed a flight plan to Mountain Rescue. If we don't report in, they'll come looking for us.
Now, that's how it's supposed to work, except I put in a flight plan for Borum Caverns, and this isn't Borum Caverns, is it, Juno?
We're in the wrong cave.
Where are we?
It hasn't got a name. It's a new system. No one's ever been down here before.
Let me ask you a question. Would you prefer to stay alive without your mommy and daddy, or die with them? That's a tough question, huh?
It was moving, it was alive, it knows we're here, we just have to go,
we can't do that.
You didn't see it. I'm not staying here.
If we try to leave, they'd kill us.
We're being quarantined here! We are being kept here to die!
While you were looking for me, I was looking for you. Well, got you now.
Was that him in the car?
Yeah, sure it was. Didn't walk very far.
Why is that?
Because I cut off his legs.
And I'm gonna do the same to you.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent, excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I am fine, Phil. How are you?
Good, good. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, this is Abe.
Abe, how's it going?
I'm doing okay.
Excellent. And we usually have a Connecticut American, but she will be unable to join due to work-related incidents. However, we have a special guest from Commonwealth of New York.
Not New York, Virginia.
That's right. I have no idea how that happened. Because I was thinking.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going?
How you doing, Phil?
Good, good. And I keep on screwing up because technically Abe is a Commonwealth of Massachusetts instead of state of Massachusetts.
Well, and technically I was born in the state of New York, so.
Technically, nobody cares.
And it is, and we discovered, me and Garrett discovered there's a third Commonwealth, which is Pennsylvania, as a matter of fact. But, yeah, no one cares. Anyway, for folks who are new to the podcast, this is Dark Discussions Podcast, as mentioned. Basically, we critique and review genre films, so sci-fi, horror, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, arthouse, cult films, foreign films, drive-in films, and whatnot. Basically, try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We have an email at darkdiscussions@aol.com where you can email us your opinions, your suggestions, your ideas, your own reviews of films or video games or anything genre, and we will read your emails on the podcast. You can even also record an audio, such as an MP3 or a WAVE, and mail it to, and we will play that on the podcast. Also, we have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, so just search for that, and you can join the conversation, where we have a number of people. We actually just topped over 800 people for the group, and basically talk genre stuff. Also, Eric, we have a website?
We do. You can find our website at darkdiscussions.com. There are any number of things to amuse you there. On the right-hand side of the front page, you can find links to friends of the podcast, so be sure to check all of them out. At the top of the page is a link to our articles section, and that has articles written by myself as well as others. There's also an audio section. It has every single episode of Dark Discussions ever recorded, as well as all of our spinoff podcasts available for free. There's bound to be something that interests you there, so check that out. Front and center on the front page is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to financially support your online artists. So if you'd like to do that, we'd appreciate it. Producing this show is not free. We do have to spend money on things like rentals and equipment and server space and hosting and websites and all that good stuff. So if you'd like to help offset that cost, that's how you can do it. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw one at random on a quarterly basis to do a show on. So if you're interested in that, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions, or you can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
All right, very good. And we are actually developing a new website that should hopefully be up late July. So it'll be new and approved.
you need to give me a heads up on that, Phil, if I need to change my spiel.
yes. Well, I'm hoping to keep the same URL, but we'll see how that is.
Yeah, but if the layout of the site changes, I need to know that.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, it should be all right. Difference is that the article section will be much better, fully improved, where articles can be immediately uploaded and released. There will be an additional couple of podcasts that are joining us, from independent podcasts to some old Horrorphilia podcasts, because unfortunately the Horrorphilia podcast is closing down in 2021, and a number of those folks are quote unquote going to be homeless, and so they're going to be joining us. But one will join us right away, who's an independent podcast, and then we will have a lot of the menu system will be better, and there'll be all the things where there'll be a search button on the page, so you can search for anything. So if you like Tony Todd, type his name in, it'll, wherever it's on the podcast pages or articles or whatever, it'll all pop up. So
very good.
Yeah. So thanks for anybody who helps with Patreon, because I had to pay extra money to get a whole area to develop. So if you don't want to donate, which is fine, because we are really not asking, but anything will help. All right, so we did have a quick email we got from a guy named Bob George. He wrote, "I'm a big fan of your book shows. Really looking forward to hearing them. I'd like to hear you do an anthology book. I don't mind your novel format, but I think it would be more interesting hearing more thoughts on multiple shorter stories. By the time you all do a round of thoughts on a novel, we're well over an hour in and only covered the plot points, kind of like listening to Cliff Notes. However, in anthology format, maybe it would be quick 15-minute blurbs, so similar to Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews and how that used to be. Also, I really do enjoy the Fishnet and Phantom podcasts. Hopefully they will return, and because right now that's on hiatus because Amy Rain is busy right now during the summer. I do enjoy your show a lot, and have it automatically downloaded as they pop up on the feed. Bob. All right. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Bob. Yeah, that always makes me happy for us, and sort of sad that he doesn't have anything better in his life.
Email us, you mean? Or be excited when a new podcast pops up? Well, yeah. Small things are what make people happy sometimes, Mike.
That's what my wife says.
Oh, you
zinged yourself. There.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
Oh, hilarious. I can't believe he threw it on himself.
I know.
Well, speaking of Pam, this is June 25th, 2020, that we are recording this episode for folks who are curious, because
We're almost halfway through.
Oh, God.
Hang on.
Almost halfway through 2020. Yes.
Longest year.
Volcanoes are coming.
They are, actually. Iceland.
The end is nigh.
Anyway, the reason people are curious, specifically Pam, was because a lot of times we record the episodes and don't release them for a week or even a month, in some event times a whole year, like the Ozark episode.
When Phil says we, he means him.
Indeed. Anyway,
this is that is another reason we're all grateful for Phil for doing all the hard work.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. So let's see. Anything else anybody want to bring up before? Oh, Joel Shoemaker passed away at the age of 80. Director of many genre films, including Phone Booth, Falling Down, Lost Boys, Flatliners, some of the Batman films, that film with 8mm. That's it, 8mm, and a bunch of other films. So I had a pretty good career there. Fortunately, he passed away. 80 years old. Had some classics. A lot of Lemons.
Yep.
A lot of directors, but a lot of classics.
I think he has more. I would say he might have more classics than Lemons, but.
Yeah, but it's more fun to make fun of the Lemons.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you had things like Flatliners and Lost Boys and Falling Down were legit classics, and I'm sure we'll cover up most of what he did with the Batman franchise.
Yeah, actually, my favorite film by him was. Probably Phone Booth. I like that film. I saw that at theaters. That was a damn good one.
Phone Booth, I saw that in theaters. That was also a very good film. Unfortunately, yeah. It's just kind of gotten lost over time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thrillers, usually thrillers are one of those things that are real popular, make a lot of money, and then they kind of are forgotten because they're thrillers for some reason.
Well, we also have to bring up Ian Holm as well, who we lost.
Oh, yes. Hey, good point. Yes, Ian Holm of... Alien is probably what most people know him from. That
Bilbo Baggins and the Lord of the Rings trilogy as well.
Yep, he's there too. Yeah, and he's done dozens of roles throughout his career. And he was in his 80s as well. I forget.
Actually, 88. Yeah.
Yeah, 88. So yeah, so we lost him too. So rest in peace to both Joel Shoemaker and Ian Holm. Quote unquote legends, I guess.
Yeah.
I'll take away the quotes and just say legends. Yeah. There you go. Hopefully they both will not be forgotten on Oscar night in 2021 when they do their in memory or whatever it's called, memoriam.
If the Oscars ever happen again.
Yes, that's a good point, too. All right, so I guess we can probably get into our topic tonight. And if anybody has more things they want to talk about, Ian Holm or Joel Shoemaker or any of their films, we can bring it up at the end, assuming we have time. But we can get into our topic tonight. So, Eric, what do you let everybody know we can discuss tonight?
All right, tonight we're going to be talking about a movie that hit the festival circuit in 2019 and is currently available to rent on digital, called Little Joe.
Our aim was to create a plant with a scent that makes its owner happy.
We are entering a new era here. The first mood-lifting, antidepressant, happy plant.
We've received orders from all over the world.
I just wanted to say that I feel really proud to be working with you.
Look what I have for you. What do you say we call him Little Joe? You have to take good care of it. Keep it warm. Talk to it. It needs attention.
What's so special about it?
It makes you happy.
Haven't you noticed how Chris has changed? Little Joe's pollen has triggered something.
Little Joe changes the people he infects.
You're starting to notice too, aren't you?
Fear can distort our perception of reality.
If I made a mistake, then it's my fault.
It seems that this has all been a bit much for you.
He frightens me.
You're a good mother. But which of your children will you choose?
That's right, Little Joe, which you also can find on disc too, is a British film directed by Austrian filmmaker. I think she's Austrian, Jessica Hauer. Austrian. And you're right, Hausner. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, there you go. And it was co-written with Geraldine Bajard, who is French. They usually work together on a lot of films, and I believe Jessica Hausner actually lives mostly in France anyway. This film here premiered in 2019 Cannes. And the film was actually competed in the Palme d'Or, which is considered probably the greatest award, one of the greatest awards in the world for films, maybe even better than an Oscar. The film stars Emily Beecham, who has mostly done TV. Don't know much about her. Ben Whishaw, who actually was in the latest Emily Blunt film, the one with Mary Poppins film. And then also Kerry Fox, who's well known for art house films and genre films and dramas and all that. She had a major role too. The film, as Eric mentioned, is now available everywhere in the US of A. And it's getting pretty solid reviews on Rotten Tomatoes at around 66%, which is kind of interesting. But as we know, Rotten Tomatoes has an odd thing because a lot of Oscar winners or award winning films or films that have competed for such awards, like The Joker and a few others, have had lower ratings than you would expect for award nominated films. So we'll get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So let's start with you, Eric.
I heard about this last week when Phil was rattling off titles for us to think about doing this week. I didn't particularly care for this movie. I don't think it's awful. There were some things I liked about it. I thought there was some very interesting cinematography. Some of the shots were really beautiful, and some of the camera movement was pretty interesting. The acting was well done, but it was very slow. And honestly, the soundtrack for this movie kind of ruined it for me. I'm sure whoever wrote the music for this is very talented. However, I found it to be incredibly incongruous with what was happening in the movie. And if I could punch music in the face, I would have. So that was a huge negative for me personally. So I thought this movie was okay. But I'm probably not going to revisit it.
All right. Very well. It's interesting that you mentioned that. The music is actually music from like the 1960s that was somehow they got the rights to it. But it's by a Japanese guy that was a French citizen. His name was T.J.
Was Japanese.
Ito.
Okay.
Yeah, it definitely sounded like it. Yeah.
Yeah. T.J. Ito, who used to score the music for his girlfriend's films or his wife's films, I should say. He died, I think probably from like smoking or something, at the age of 47. But he and his girlfriend did a bunch of art house films in France. And as you can probably guess by this music, it was very art housey. Mm-hmm. And his girlfriend was Maya Deren, so avant-garde artist, both he and Maya, and Maya was French. All right, sounds good, Eric. Let's go with you, Mike.
Yeah, I watched this last night with Pam, the aforementioned Pam. Pam said it was meh. Wasn't all that thrilled with it. And I got to confess, I wasn't all that thrilled with it either. It was kind of like Bad Sex. It started out okay, and then it kind of stayed okay, and then it just continued. It just kind of continued being okay, and then it just kind of stopped, and there was never really any excitement or climax in there whatsoever. You know, it's strange because it's just, I don't know. I just, we've seen films like this before. I've seen a Star Trek episode like this before. it's not, so I can't even give it points for being a novel idea. It's not a horrible idea. The fact that it's been revisited a couple of times tells you it's not a bad idea. But when you have classic examples like Invasion of the Body Snatchers,
yeah,
mm-hmm. you really have to do something different. And by different, I don't mean the score, which I didn't really have a problem with, or the overwhelming use of color blocks, you know, of purple and pink and teal, and I think there was a symbolism there that I just didn't quite get. Although I think maybe some of the normal people had secondary colors and the infected people had primary colors, but I wasn't entirely sure of that either. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, there was one moment in the film where I thought it had gotten, instead of just kind of there, that I thought it had gotten terribly, terribly bad. And then it was revealed that that was very intentional, because it turned out it was just sort of a joke on a character and on the audience. And I at least got a sigh of relief over that. But yeah, not a lot happened. There was one character I found unbelievably irritating. I don't know if, well, you laughed. I don't know if we found it to be the same one.
So, yeah, we'll find out.
We'll find out. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sorry. It's science fiction horror. I wanted something different, you know, other than some of the more human drama stuff that we've been doing. And this didn't really scratch that itch for me. But it's free on Hulu. I say if you could try it and give it 30 minutes, and if you don't like it up to that point, you probably won't like it the rest of the way.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I found out about this film because I saw the disc at Walmart and looked up the disc to see if it was on Blu-ray. It was not, and the price for the disc right there in Walmart was the same price it was on your various online retailers. So I picked it up because the premise seemed pretty interesting. And I picked it up. I've watched it twice now. I watched it when I first got the disc like a month ago, and then again last night, or 2 nights ago, actually. I'm sorry. I like this film a lot. Then again, I'm a drama and art house fan more than I am a horror fan or grindhouse fan or any of that type of stuff. So this is kind of fit my bill pretty good. I can see where some people think that, yeah, it's really not truly original because, again, it has some cribbing from other films such as Invasion of Body Snatchers, Jurassic Park, because life will find a way. And then also the Little Shop of Horrors.
I was going to pull that out later.
Nice.
Smart minds like us think alike, I'm telling you. I say it all the time. I can see that as possibly an issue. I actually enjoyed the film the second time even more than the first. The soundtrack, I forgot about the soundtrack. So when I was watching it 2 days ago, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. That's the film with the weird soundtrack. But I think it kind of worked because the film is definitely trying to make people uncomfortable, and the music is very avant-garde that you would kind of like, you know, feel like something's off.
Want to punch it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically trying to make you think something's off. And I think the film is pretty solid and original enough because the biology and the, I guess since we've said body snatchers, the body snatching is much different than what one would think. It's we'll get into that during the spoilers. I enjoyed it a whole lot and give it a a thumbs up. I recommend it. However, again, as Mike especially said, it's a slow film. And it's an art house film, so don't expect like slice and dice or action horror or anything like that. It's more of a study of number of people and what's happening around them based off of irresponsibility by some of the characters and whatnot. So yeah, I liked it. Let's go with you, Abe.
So I knew about this film because I saw that was what we're going to do next, and I watched today. Keep everything fresh in my mind, and I'm kind of where Mike and Eric are. If there's any Bobby Stanton story I would recommend before this, it'd be all the others, most others, especially Babe Invasion and Body Snatchers. This one is okay. It's nothing really special in terms of the concept. I mean, that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to revisit it and try to do something new, but they don't really do a whole lot that makes it really stand out or be that much of a film to revisit. I found the performances kind of a mix. Some were pretty good and others felt very stoic and cold. I'm not sure this was intentional because it was, you know, in the lab and everything like that. There were some kind of things that left me scratching my head in terms of why in God's name would you literally make a security code of the name of the thing you're working on? I guess kept waiting for something more exciting to happen. And for the most part, really nothing did happen. I really wasn't that crazy about the soundtrack. I did like some of the bits. I loved some of the windpipe bits, but the drill, the kind of high pitched sounds and the drilling sounds that sound like a dentist drill or the weird dog barking moments were just absolutely asinine choices. God, those were so bad. And
punch it!
Oh, Jesus! It was fucking. But because the thing is, if they had used it more sparingly, like at certain points, it would have felt more atmospheric. But it was used in the most weirdest moments where I felt like a lack of a soundtrack could have added a little more of an impact. I don't hate the film. I just wasn't really all that enthralled with it, and I just don't see myself revisiting it. And I can't really see myself placing it really high in the list come the end of the year. It's definitely for those looking for a more art house film. I mean, that's what just looking at it, you can tell that's what they're doing. But I think it could have been a little more interesting in terms of the execution of the concept. There were some good shots, but it's not a bad film, just nothing. Maybe it's just not my taste. Maybe it's not my cup of, I just would say my cup of Joe. But that's just my thought. So I guess we'll get into it after everyone else gives their thoughts.
All right, very well. Barrett.
I'm kind of with the other three guys. it was okay. I thought it was a little too derivative, and it didn't have enough differences to make it stand out. I did like the cinematography, and I liked the acting. I thought both of those were solid, but the movie itself was a little slow. And I don't mind slow burns, but it was a little too slow.
No burn.
And as far as the music, yeah, it was kind of annoying. I felt like they were trying to make the music be part of the plant somehow. I don't know how to explain this, but it was like the plant was smart and alive, and they would do this sound when it was thinking almost. That's how I felt about it. But I didn't like it. I probably wouldn't watch it again. It probably won't be on my top 10 list at the end of the year. But I really did like the cinematography. I thought it was a pretty movie, just with the plant and everything. That's about all I can say that hasn't been said already.
All right. Very good. Other podcasters such as Jason Lloyd and Mark Lowe both like this film. So, again, you know, 67% on Rotten Tomatoes. So,
I just thought of something.
Yes. Sir.
Whose dick are you going to suck when Jason retires?
Right. He rides his dick. Oh, I think that's going to get cut later.
Jason's dick?
That's just terrible. I don't think he's Jewish, so he's probably not cut. All right, so... okay, so...
It sounds like you would know, Phil, from what they're saying.
Oh, for Christ's sakes. All right, I set myself up for that one, right? Okay, yeah, all right. He lives on a... This is ridiculous. All right, anyway.
I'm so pleased with myself.
This is ridiculous. Either way, other horror podcasts that are in our circle do like this film. So it's definitely, it depends on your taste. And what everybody said is fairly correct. Unfortunately, I thought more people would like this film, but I was mistaken that the other co-hosts would.
I really tried.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. Alice, a single mother, is a dedicated senior plant breeder at a corporation engaged in developing new species. Against company policy, she takes one home as a gift for her teenage son and names it after him, but soon starts fearing it.
All right, that sounds good. Yeah, mm-hmm. Acceptable. One thing I would like to correct, even though Barrett did make a good point, whenever they made the music, it made it like the plant was thinking. But I think it was more instinct. Or Mike, what's the thing when things do, like plants do, or things do something that, you know, example, like a Venus flytrap would close on a bug, or a vine would crawl over and hook onto a pole or something. What is that called? What was something like that called? Because it's not intelligence, but it's instinct.
Instinct.
Well, it's an instinct. It's a stimulus response. It's
stimulus response.
I think I've got a word, but I'm not sure it's the right word, so I just want to double check. I think they use the noise, because that high pitched buzz.
Mm-hmm.
Tropism. Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. It's just sort of because it's an unnerving sound, and maybe it was trying to get you kind of on edge. But I just kind of was thinking, I think it was Dumb and Dumber, you know, when Jim Carrey says, "Do you want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?" And that's what they had playing through about a third of the film.
It's like they were trying to do what they did in Invasion of the Body Snatchers remake, except not as well.
Which remake?
The second remake. Sorry. Oh, okay. Or, I mean, the first remake. First remake. The one in the 70s.
The third remake.
The 70s one.
Yeah, Donald Sutherland one.
Yes, the Donald Sutherland one.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
But it seemed like that kind of sound to me, but it was done right in that movie as opposed to this one.
All right. Fair enough. So I think it was to do that instinct thing. What was the term you used again that I flipped out and said, yeah, that's it, Mike.
Tropism.
Stimulus response.
Stimulus response. Yeah, that was even a better one. They're all good. All right, so let's talk about things that aren't spoilery first. I think this film has different messages. Obviously, one message is don't F with science.
Or nature, rather.
Yeah. Or nature.
The traditional science trope, yeah.
Yeah.
Because life finds a way.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, to get it in there.
It also, though, for scientists, capitalism is bad, probably, right? Because everybody was overlooking, not just capitalism, but capitalism and also self. Making yourself better or more popular, more wanted by your fellow employees, because everybody was kind of breaking every rule. Mm-hmm. I felt.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, they were so irresponsible, these people, that I just wanted to punch every one of them.
They're so stupid.
Well, she's the worst.
Oh, God, she sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She just didn't care about rules, from what I could tell.
Well, anyway, the point is that out of everybody in the company, only that one woman played by Carrie Fox, I felt, was legit employee, smart, and whatever. But she had a backstory that made her suspect. So as a result, it kind of made her opinion not as important or significant, even if she was probably 100% right. But yeah, I don't know. It's unfortunate. Generally, Mike, how was the science for this film? Was it decent, you think?
It was pretty well, I think it bugged shit out of me, a lot of it, like the not understanding really how viruses are used for genetic engineering. The one thing that annoyed the fuck out of me was the behavioral health individual in the crew.
Yeah,
right. Right.
Yeah, Carrie Fox's character. It's Bella.
Right, when she makes the comment about how it's unnatural and all things need to breed, it's like, do you have any idea how many goddamn plant species we have bred to not breed? I mean, everything that is seedless, bananas and watermelons and oranges and strawberries, all of them we have been genetically manipulating.
A fruitless crab apple tree in my front yard.
Right. Forever. And,
it's not the first time we've done anything like that.
Right. And it's not like I am perfectly capable of overlooking stupid science for all sorts of reasons. But if you're not going to give me anything truly compelling to hang on to, it's going to be on its face absurd. Then, again, at least for me, then it tells me they just didn't do nearly enough homework for this. You know, we're all used to the Frankenstein stories, right? I mean, it's the beware of mucking around with Mother Nature. You know, which we wouldn't have your dog if we didn't. We've been doing it for thousands of years, but there's always that be careful because stuff, and then out comes a coronavirus that says, "Fuck you, nature's great on its own." if there was a better story behind it, if I found, a compelling interpersonal drama, then I wouldn't focus on it so much. It's that it wasn't giving me a whole lot else to think about. And really just that one character just annoyed me through much of the film. And it was also weird, the way they talked about, the character. I don't know. I haven't worked in a professional lab, but I don't know that they, demote you because you had a mental health problem and tried to commit suicide. That really is an open book to a lawsuit. And she killed her dog, Phil. How could you be defending her character?
Yes.
She killed her dog.
I mean, she didn't put it in an animal shelter or anything like that. She outright just had it put down.
Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah, but the dog was something happened to the dog.
Prove it.
We know it happened. I agree. It was terrible. The dog was put down, but the dog was infected. It was infected.
Come on, man.
The being.
I think you would want a little bit more evidence before, like a diagnosis before you
at least
put
a little
Lily
more
down.
Than a day.
She tried to get a diagnosis. There wasn't one, and she put it down anyway.
No. She brought it to the diagnosis, and they did all the blood tests. Remember, she told.
Yeah, and
they said it was showing.
They didn't find anything.
Could have been dementia.
Well, I'm agreeing 100% with everything you guys are saying. However, this woman knew that the plant was bad.
Or did she? Maybe she's just
she's
a wacky
crazy.
Little.
Yeah.
Well, that I mean, I guess you could look at it as open-ended and whatever, but I don't know. I'm pretty sure that the plant was bad. But well, you know what? See, there was this Austrian TV show called Parfum, so P-A-R-F-U-M, so perfume, basically. That's on Netflix, and I watched it as a 6-episode miniseries.
Parfum.
And actually, I mentioned it to you, Barrett, like 6 months ago. So I watched it, and basically, it's interesting where there's like a serial killer and stuff, and they kill people that they know that have sense that make other people crazy. Crazy as in, you know, like someone that's very sexually appealing has the scent, and so the girl gets killed, and then they use that scent to make perfume because then they can use it to attract people and stuff. So this film here is kind of like that, where they use various chemicals within a biological being, and those chemicals can manipulate people's thought process, or in this case, a dog's process of doing things or whatnot. And this Carrie Fox's character, Bella, who oddly named her dog Bello. I mean, is that a narcissist or what?
I got a little confused by that for a moment.
Yeah, that confused me too for a little bit.
That's just narcissism at its worst. But the thing is that she knew that the smells or the pollen or whatever off these plants could manipulate people, and in this case, her dog. And the question is it permanent once the manipulation happens? Because if it's not permanent, then you're right, she's a murderer, because she killed the dog that could have been back to normal by tomorrow or in a week from now.
Bello didn't even get a credit. What the hell? They usually put the dog in the credits.
That's not right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he died.
Like, the lodge got the dog got the credit. So, and that dog died. Well, spoiler alert.
Justin Scarbella.
Yeah, so a lot of films this year, dogs have been dying that have been pretty good, even if the dog has died. That idea may have intrigued me more because I had seen that Austrian miniseries like 6 months ago. And I thought that was a cool idea. And this film kind of reminded me of that, which, again, you could say this cribs from that. And that was from a book. And then Dustin Hoffman movie called Perfume was based off that book as well as this miniseries. But this is like smell rather than pollen. But either way, it's chemical. And I think that's why I like this movie, Mike, and felt it was different enough, because it's using chemicals to influence rather than, you know, bodily takeover like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Well, yeah, but it's also, I mean, there's stuff like that in, you know, it's like aromatherapy. I think it's an interesting idea, and it's a way to tackle that idea, but I mean, it's the whole reason, you know, they put animal musks and plant scents in perfumes and colognes, right? It's supposed to be to trigger people and their desires. You know, and certainly there's something to be said for, you know, it's, or just even scented candles, stuff like that. There's definitely a connection between odors and mood and things like that. So it's an interesting mechanism for them to go through it that way. So I don't have the concept. I think is a fine concept to work with, and it doesn't introduce an interesting question of just when we stimulate ourselves chemically. You know, for whatever reason, you know, because we feel bad. What do we do to make ourselves feel happy? Is it real? Is it artificial? For using it from a theoretically artificial source. And there are interesting questions at hand. I don't know how well they necessarily addressed it. But yeah, the concept is fine. I just don't think the story went anywhere with it.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just at the beginning, and it's only the people that are directly working with the flowers and their immediate family, or specifically the one lead actress's family in the movie. So I mean, when we get to the next level, that happens like in the last 5 minutes of the film, once the handful of people who are questioning the logic of doing what they're doing are eliminated, in a sense. One is basically eliminated, and another actually succumbs. So once that happens, then that's when the quote-unquote apocalypse happens. Again, this apocalypse isn't going to be like a zombie apocalypse or invasion of the body snatcher apocalypse. It's more of people just now have a new bond with a new a plant, in a sense, and then therefore they're going to have to protect that plant. But I think they would be able to still be them as people, even if I don't know. I mean, we'll get into that. Well, I guess we could talk about all that stuff once people become infected. So I guess we'll throw up the spoiler now because it's hard to really talk about anything about what happens without doing it. So we'll throw up the spoiler now. Anybody who wants to see this film, Mike mentioned, you can find it on Hulu for free. You can VOD it pretty much anywhere for rental and or purchase, and it is on disc as well, where I was able to see it. And the disc actually has a 30-minute interview with the director and lead actress at Cannes, I think. So it was pretty informative because she talks about motherhood and things like that, and
growing up and everything like that, and moving past what you've had beforehand.
Yeah, yeah,
letting exactly. go and stuff.
Right, yeah, because exactly. Where it's you create something or you protect something, and then eventually that something leaves and has nothing to do with you anymore because now it's an equal and stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff. It's called
puberty.
Yeah, exactly, and that's pretty much. And this is she was partly trying to get that. As a theme, as part of the film, and there is kind of with her son. All right, so the spoiler's up, and we will discuss anything and everything. So, do you guys think when a person breathes in the pollen in this film, are they still themselves, or just partly controlled by the plant, or are they gone completely?
It was really kind of unclear the way they talked about it in the movie. Mm. Clearly the plant influences them. I don't think it necessarily controlled them. Like, I don't believe the plants are sentient, and I don't believe they like took control of the people. But I believe that whatever scientific mumbo jumbo you want to use to describe it, they changed something in the people so that they had a desire to help the plants.
Yeah, it's like
it was a parasite.
It was almost like gave them an addictive need to be with the plants in order to get that pheromones, the pollen and stuff, keep them happy. I always thought the right word when watching this, they were addicted to the pollen, you know, that they needed it because they become dependent on it to keep them happy. I didn't really get
it. I think.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You keep going. You
were... Well, it's just like the very fact that, you know, there was just this sense that, you know, it's kind of a thing where I think in a sense that people were being taken over in the sense that they were being replaced, but more in the sense that there are certain judgments of their character have been influenced that the world became a very smaller one around a few basic needs and the plants above all else. But the problem is that there are a lot of similar moments, like when the woman Bella mentioned that she sees changes, like, you know, Chris seems to care about and wants to protect the planet at all costs. But we never get many scenes of that or any scenes of that. And so I would like to see more about that. We've kind of like the audience more guessing and stuff like that instead of being just told things. I'd like to have seen more.
I mean, it was a symbiote, right? I mean, it was. They're both probably benefiting from it somehow.
Well, that depends on how you define benefit, right?
Yeah. Well,
biologically, I mean, it's a symbiote. I mean, technically symbiosis is just that there's a close relationship. It doesn't have to benefit both. Parasitism is technically a symbiosis. The plant, in theory, benefits. There's a question as to how long-term the humans come out of this. They feel happy. There's that. But, you know, in terms of the biological welfare of humanity, you know, long-term, you know, do people become so obsessed with taking care of the thing that they forget to procreate themselves, or do they just go about and live their normal happy life otherwise? And I don't think that's clear. Something I was thinking of with this is kind of like, as we're discussing it, Phil, about are they themselves or not. The movie from 2 years ago, Mom and Dad.
Oh yeah.
Where basically what it does is it, for those who've missed the film, it flips the part of the parent brain that wants to protect their children, to make them want to murder their children. But everything else about them is perfectly normal. They don't want to harm anybody else's child. In fact, they're all shocked and horrified when they see somebody murder their own child. But then they turn around, they see their kid, and they try to murder their own kid. And I think that's kind of like a thing here, except a more benevolent version of it, in that I think they're under the influence, you know, the same way somebody might be if they, you know, had, you know, smoked a joint or something. They might be a little bit of a happier mood. You know, but otherwise they seem to basically be the same person. It's just they have a thing for the plant. And as long as the plant's not involved, I don't know that you would really notice anything about it. I think otherwise they're more than happy to kind of go on and live their lives. But it's when the plant is threatened, they protect it, you know, that it's, I mean, maybe if this was a thing in 1,000 years, you know, human society would be completely changed. And, you know, instead you wouldn't be going to Disneyland, you'd be going to Plantland, you know, you'd be going to Joeland, you know, because it becomes the center of people's existence. So there might be a broader term change, but in terms of individuals, I don't know. It's like that dramatic a change. You know, it's not like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where there is a clear conspiracy going on, where there is an emotional deadening, you know, all the bonds between people have been severed. I don't think it's that dramatic a change. I think it's a very subtle change, which is an interesting idea.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think, there were some points I kept thinking the film was trying to mislead as to whether or not this was all in our main character's head. But it's also kept me wondering if you know, because she's slow to react, but Bella, the old woman, she's completely convinced. And seeing how easy it was for her to nearly get out of the lab when she got locked in, and also how easy it was for the son to get into that area, I kept thinking, if she's so freaked out that there's a takeover, why doesn't she just try to kill the plants?
You mean Bella?
Bella, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a fair point. I mean, but I don't think she was. Yeah, that's a fair point, because how dangerous? Obviously, she thought it was really dangerous because she put down her dog when the dog got infected.
Yeah,
but she was willing to go in there. That's what that bothered me.
Well, that's why that she was. They put on the face masks, right? They said everybody has to start wearing face masks.
She's still worried about infection. You think she would refuse, not because she don't want to get taken over.
Well, that's a fair point too. But again, we know a lot of stuff, right, where people don't want to lose their job, right? So I mean, people are willing to suck it up. If she sabotaged the lab, she's fired and probably could be arrested. If she doesn't go in and do her job, she's fired. So sometimes,
well, the thing
I
is,
would have thought she got a gas mask or something better than that. Well, little
also,
covering.
Also, it wasn't a superior that ordered her to go into the place. It was just that redheaded douche who kept
exactly
right. You know, but if she refuses and she doesn't do her job, you know what I'm saying? I agree with you, Abe.
She didn't even have access to there, so she wasn't even supposed to be in there. Remember they. She had to give her the access card.
Well, I think she was allowed in there, but she wasn't allowed to have access because she was demoted after, as Mike mentioned the demotion probably was illegal from a prior behavioral health incident that made her attempt suicide. And after she came back, they demoted her and she lost the key card privilege, but I think she was still allowed in there. It's just that she wasn't allowed in there alone, like some of the other people or you know.
But that, so would she be suspicious of that?
Yeah. I mean, the very fact she was the most cautious person in the whole movie. She fell for something like that.
Well, and again, you're fair points, Abe. I'm just saying though, even someone that has a behavioral health issues or a behavioral health individual, if you prefer, still can function in society pretty well, which she does. And she also understands that if she doesn't do her job, she...
But it was a superior ask. Someone asked her. They didn't order her. She asked because the guy asked her as a favor because apparently her girlfriend was in a quote-unquote accident.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. But they were on the same team, right?
Yeah, so, but I don't know. That part bothered me.
Right.
Probably
right.
Minor, but it bothered me for sure.
Sure. So let's explain what's going on here. So there's two groups of plants, the purple plants and the red plants that are being made. The red plants are the ones that our lead character is working on, which are releasing pollen that is supposed to make people more relaxed and happy. And that's their goal. And they plan to try to bring it to a flower show in probably the Netherlands or something. And then they will market it as, you know, the new plant of if not the future, but the plant that everybody wants. But they're falling behind because of safety reasons, because they obviously wanted to be careful. They have to follow the law, you know, the biology and scientific laws and all this other stuff. And so they're falling behind. And so they're thinking they're not going to make it for the festival or convention. And then there's the purple plant, which we don't really know too much about, but eventually that just dies out. And it's considered a failure, even though our behavioral health individual, Bella, believes that it was purposely killed off by the pollen from the Joes, which are the red plant, because she believes that this is... You know, like similar to like if you go to a forest, the smaller trees will die off because they can't get to the light. All the trees grow. Trees will grow sideways, whatever, any way to get to the light. And if you can't get to the light, you die. And so it's if not intentionally killing other plants, the trees are killing each other off unintentionally because they're all fighting for the same thing. And I think what Bella believes is the Joes are killed off the purple plant for similar reasons, like I just used as an analogy that the trees in the forest. And that's pretty much the setup of the film. And then we begin to have issues where maybe Bella is right and the plant is influencing with its pollen, as Mike mentioned, or you mentioned Barrett, or you mentioned Eric, the people are now having the pollen breathed in, and then it affects their brain where the plant is now something that's in their orbit and must be protected and taken care of and grown.
It's essentially they become Gollum with the ring.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I like that.
My precious.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, little Joe is my precious.
By the way, yeah, Phil, one of the I can't remember which tree it is. It is one that's local, native to the Northeast. I can't remember if it was an oak or a maple. Maybe a walnut, but it will actually drip acid around it to acidify the soil to kill off competing plants. There's all sorts of ways. It's very questionable as to like, is it like rubbing its branches together like some, you know, cheap comic book villain and whether how much it's conscientiously doing that. You know, is one thing. We want to be really careful about plants deliberately killing people off because we all remember what happened in The Happening.
I've been trying to block it out.
Yeah.
Run! It's a plea!
Until just now, it was banished from my head.
Yeah, and that makes sense, Mike, because some trees, like, you don't find grass around their trunk, because even though the acid is probably trying to kill off other saplings, it also kills off the grass, too, right? So you just have this dead area around you.
Right, because even something like grass will take nutrients out of the soil, right, that it's going to want.
I'm pretty sure walnut trees are the ones, because I'm remembering all this stuff with a walnut tree in my neighborhood.
Yeah, and it makes sense.
I think that's what it was, yeah. It just came to me while we were talking, and it's hard to access those files while we're discussing the film. But, I'm pretty sure you're right. I think it might be, like, black walnut.
All right.
So anyway, yeah, so it is an established thing in nature, was my point.
Right, yeah, and it's not like
people try to fuck each other.
It's not like it's not intentionally malevolent. It's a survival technique that has been developed over time. And that's what is kind of interesting about this film, I felt, was that this biologically made, genetically changed flower or plant to market as a plant that would be desirable because of its smell also has a side effect, which is it has a side that is malevolent, but not intentionally malevolent, to have it use these new traits to survive.
I'm going to push back a little bit on the word malevolent, because that implies intent.
Yeah.
And I don't think the plant's conscious. It's not intending anything. It's just made by the lab.
Yeah, and the side effect that it created, so it's not malevolent, because you're absolutely right. It's the side effect that it creates, the plant creates, is a survival side effect. So it's a survival side effect where the pollen not only is pleasing smell, but it will also infect animals around it to want to protect the plant. And so it's a survival technique rather than a malevolent technique. You're absolutely right, Ark. And I think that's what's kind of cool about the concept and how it can affect people, and not just ordinary folks that would buy the plant, but also the people who are scientifically involved with it that would know the difference. And yet the plant is still even more powerful than their wisdom of knowing, okay, I've been infected, and that's the reason why I am protecting the plant.
Yeah, and again, this is something else I'm pretty sure you'll find in nature, because there are, like, I think, like, it's acacia trees and ants, where the ants will take care, will live on and protect the tree. I don't know if it's the plant manipulating them, though ants are very susceptible to manipulation through chemicals. I'm sure there are some types of plants that bribe insects to take care of them, in fact, and actually probably some in order to help them survive. And then in return, give something to its insect overlords.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's quite the opposite from the fungus that takes over ants, the zombie ants,
which
makes them go into their own nest and basically spread the spores around to get so they can grow and overtake the entire colony. So different plants have different means of trying to adapt and spread out, whether it's killing something or, in quote unquote, giving something back to their, whether it's a partner or a host, depending on how malicious the results are for the other side.
Right, for being loving to cook, like peppers, I learned through all this is that the hottest peppers, like the scorpion pepper and habanero and all that, are intentionally hot because mammals, like deer and bear and whatever, won't want to eat it because it's too hot. And
then instead, people come along.
Well, that's true. but birds, certain birds, it doesn't affect at all the heat. And so what happens is by having birds eat the peppers, the seeds that travel further, and the plant, and so the pepper can spread further. And that was intentionally done biologically through, Mike, what's the word when you change in time, like animals to monkeys to people?
Evolution.
Yes, evolution. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. So the peppers evolved naturally to prevent mammals from eating it, because the mammals will actually dissolve the seeds, and also they won't travel as far. And so there's a lot of stuff like this in nature, and this here is an example of that. And Bella kind of figures it out pretty easily and tries to convince our lead scientist on the plant that this is what's happening with the plant, where it has evolved to control people or make people want to protect a plant, because since it is a plant that doesn't breed because the seeds, it's a sterile plant, it needs another way to survive, and this is its way to survive. And I think there's two things that are against our quote-unquote hero of the film. The first is the person that's telling her the problems is a behavioral health individual. And the second problem against is that I think she is a selfish asshole, because she likes her job and her work more than her kid. She wants to get this plant to the convention and has no issues breaking rules to do it. And she even breaks rules and gives one as a gift to her own child without doing further studies. While at the lab, they're saying we got to wear masks because we don't know enough yet. So she seems like a decent
person. Idiot. Yes.
She seems, yeah. Well, that's the thing. If she was your neighbor, she seems like, yeah, she's okay. But based off of her therapy that she goes to, a psychologist for whatever reason, for behavioral health reasons herself. She seems like a narcissistic ass. And also, she obviously has some other issues going on too, because from the breakup with her ex-husband and whatnot, she's very cold to a potential boyfriend, a lot of her coworkers, and as I mentioned, her own son. So I think it was set up perfectly for everything to screw up because of the, as basically you said, Eric, what was the term again that you just said?
Asshole? What?
Yeah.
Which one?
She's just a dangerous scientist. I mean,
yeah, she's very careless. She's absolutely fucking careless.
So, Phil, you mentioned the therapy session there, and I just want to pause for a moment to point out that this, the first therapy session, had the camera movement that I found so interesting, because most of the time, a scene like that, you just cut back and forth between the two people talking. But in that particular scene, the camera started on her. As she's going on about such and such, and the camera kind of moves and pivots and eventually swings around to focus on the therapist when she begins to speak, and then kind of reverses back the other way and eventually swings back, which was a really interesting way to do a dialogue scene that I hadn't seen before. And I enjoyed it, and therefore was a little disappointed when later in the movie, when there was another therapy session, it was just a standard cut back and forth.
Now, Eric, I agree. That's a good point. Why do you think they did it that way? Do you think it was just because it was a kind of cool way to do it, or were they trying to say something about the character at that time in the film? Because like you said, it's different, the later version.
No, I think they did it because it looks cool, and probably the later version way is quicker to do, and that's why they did it that way, because time is money, people, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Actually, since you mentioned that, and you gave him kudos for that, this is a thing that made both my wife and I go, what the fuck? It was a different conversation scene where Alice is talking to her son. I think it was Alice is talking to her son. Yeah, because they're in the house. And they're sitting far apart from each other. And the camera zooms in as they're talking onto a purple curtain.
Okay, yeah.
And we could... And it just keeps zooming in on the purple curtain as they're talking. And we have no idea why. And like to the point where the characters are now off the screen and all you see is the purple curtain. And I have no idea why we were supposed to be focusing on the purple curtain.
Was that where the plant was?
No.
I know it wasn't. That was my first thought. I was like, did I miss something with the plant? No, that wasn't it. It
looked like it was just trying to be an artsy technique because it really didn't really add anything because nothing would have really changed if they just focused on the character still talking.
Well, yeah, I think what it was like at this point, the relationship with the son is strained anyway, and then at this point, it may be strained for other reasons too, and so when you're rather than doing this weird technique, say like Spike Lee would do or someone else would do, where they would have the chairs pulled back, or they would even do the Alfred Hitchcock thing where you pull the camera back and then you keep on focusing in or whatever. I think this was her way, the director, of showing their distance to the point where they're both out of the screen. You know, so I mean, it may have not been as obvious.
I don't know what she was trying to do, but it did whatever she was trying to do, it just was distracting and didn't work for me at all.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an art house technique, and that's why you probably wouldn't see this type of screenshot in a mainstream film for sure. But I think there was two things. One, it was trying to make us uncomfortable in a sense, and also the distance between the two characters. But again, yeah, maybe it isn't a good technique for most folk. But I think that's why it was done, even if it is a controversial technique. What else I want to bring? Oh, what about the school friend, Selma? So there's this Joe, not the plant, but Joe the son, has a school friend, basically a girlfriend, and the scenes when they would fight with the mother, Joe would fight with the mother and the girl's there and they're just showing the girl looking and they don't, you can't see the mother or son fighting, but you see the girl. When I was a kid, 15 or whatever, I would go over to my buddy's house or something and they would fight like dogs, him and his mother. And I just felt so uncomfortable. And the expressions that this girl, Selma, had on her face was basically the same expressions. And it brought back all those uncomfortable moments when I would go over to my friend's house. And it's like, what do you say? What do you do? You know, and if they drag you into the argument, it's just a horrible, horrible feeling. And I don't know. I mean, this is obviously just trivia, I guess, because no one's commenting. But I've seen this happen many times, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is absolutely horrifying, absolutely horrifying."
Oh, yeah, I think we've all been in some situation like that or another, where there's a couple that's arguing or whatever, and it's clearly a completely personal thing, and it just spills out. And everybody just kind of like, all right, I think it's time to go home now.
Yeah, I got somewhere else to be.
Yeah, those are disasters. Especially, but the worst is like she was invited over for dinner, and then they start fighting at the dinner table, and it's like, oh my god, it's just.
Well, that was the kid's fault because he's a little dick. You don't bring that up when you have company.
Right. Well, at that point, he was already. Possessed by the plant, wasn't he?
Well, what's that got to do with his dad?
Yeah, that's
true. Another thing I didn't get about this whole movie.
Yeah,
is what was the connection between little Joe and him wanting so badly to move to his father's place?
Well, I think that was part of the thing about the mother, the lead actress, is that her character was supposed to be, as you said, an asshole, and so her own son wants to move with the father because he ain't getting the love that he should be getting at with the...
No, I get all that. What does it have to do with the plant? Because you mentioned he was already possessed at that point.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like Mike said. The plant control is now part of the life and is in the orbit of each person that's smelled its pollen, but it still functions normally, meaning the person still functions normally, even if the plant has now taken over in a sense. I mean, I think that's, don't you think that's part of it, Mike? Like they can still have the same fights and the same arguments and the same likes and needs and want to watch, you know,
right,
rerun Benny Hill.
And
but the plan is now just part of your orbit.
Right.
But the film tries to make it sound like the plant is their complete orbit.
Well, this is where I don't think it's clear, right? I don't think that. I mean, I'm not even 100% convinced who was and wasn't exposed to the pollen. And maybe that was also part of the film, right? Maybe we are supposed to be in that unreliable narrator thing. Maybe we're supposed to be in Alice's head where she is second guessing herself at different points of the film. And, I people aren't going back to Body Snatchers. They are not that overtly different. Clearly the kid is going through things because he's a teenage boy and therefore a schmuck. Did he want to go to his dad's because he was being passive aggressive against his mom? Did he want to go to his dad's because he's a teenage boy looking for a male role model? Did he want to go to his dad's because he's planning on infecting him with spores? I have no idea. And I don't know that it wants to give you those answers, and I'm fine with kind of ambiguity in that. But again, if there's still not enough meat on the rest of this story for me to be left satisfied with keeping those while still keeping the other things ambiguous.
Right.
And with the mother, you know, I understand why she's got an issue with it. It's, find me, there's not a whole lot of divorces with a child or multiple children where custody is not an issue, or or parents don't fight each other to some degree over wanting custody, or even if it's not custody, then over visitation time and all the rest of it. And she's a mom, she wants her son, and she would, as she's seeing on a personal front, that it's that if she loses her son, it's sort of a personal failure as a mother. I get the tension over that. She's in that, I can do everything, I can be a great scientist and a great mom, and she doesn't want to lose that fight, and she's afraid that she will be losing that argument if she loses her son.
She can bring home the bacon and fry it up in the pan.
She ain't a good scientist and she ain't a good mom either, so she's a two-time loser. But on a serious note, the first time we meet the son is early in the film, where he's waiting for his mom at the work, and he's talking to Chris, the other scientist that kind of has the hots for his mom. And Chris is trying to, make conversation. Yeah, your mom's doing good, whatever. And he goes, whatever. And you see he's bored and whatnot. And then based off of the therapy sessions, like you said, Eric, how they spin the thing, and she's kind of talking, and then the therapist writes or says in her little recorder after the woman leaves that she thinks that she looks at the son, not jealous of the son, what's the word I'm looking for? The son is a handicap to what she really wants to do, which is she'd rather focus on work and have fun at work, and her son is just this unfortunate thing that happens to be in her life. But obviously, being a mother, she doesn't want to give up that.
That makes sense, because kids ruin everything.
Well, but that's the thing, is that she doesn't want to give up the son, because as Mike said, it's a personal failure if she gives up the son, because people look at her as a loser because she gave up her child. But also, the son is saying, I'd rather live with the other parent, Also shows the theory.
Well, one thing I noticed from observing both the father and the mother, I guess it's also, I kind of sense of elitism as well from her. She's a high-ranking scientist in this big lab and stuff like that. And the father is in this quiet little countryside, everything like that. So I think because she's afraid of losing a son, I think I do agree. It's not just a failure as a mother, she's a fear of being, but also the fact that she's afraid that, you know, she would be losing someone that maybe she thinks she's superior to.
Right. No, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think she's a narcissist for sure. And I also think she's a selfish asshole, too. So she has these weird motivations that, well, I guess they're not weird, because all you have to do is turn on the news and you see all these motivations. But they're motivations that we get to see firsthand. And it's interesting, too, because it's supposed to be our protagonist. And even though she's not a hateable person like some protagonists we've seen in films, as the movie goes by, she becomes someone that you dislike pretty much based off of how she treats her coworkers, how she doesn't care about her science, how she talks about her son in therapy. Some people would say, oh, she's a feminist and you know, good for her, which is fine. But and she's honest to the therapist about, you know, her son is like a double-edged sword, someone that she wants to take care of, but he's also a hindrance. But, you know, you make the bed you make, you know, you have to sleep in it. And any of these people who just run away or I don't know, it's just interesting how the character evolves or how my opinion of her evolves as the film goes by. I don't know if you guys felt that way at first, if you liked her at all in the film, or did you guys dislike her?
I disliked her the whole way.
I wasn't really all like attached to her at all. I found her just unreal. Not that as interesting. That is interesting as maybe the film wanted her to feel. I guess I got really frustrated with her slow reaction, you know, and also some of her dumb choices. If she started to suspect that the plant was messing with her son, why didn't she just go into the room and get rid of the fucking thing?
Because I don't think she was convinced that she didn't believe it.
She got to a certain point to where she was.
I don't think she ever 100% believed that the plant was affecting people. Or she just didn't want to believe it. She was
suspicious that her colleagues murdered her wackadoodle lady.
Yeah, the behavioral health individual. Yeah.
And I'm going to guess that if you were
wackadoodle,
if you have even a shred of doubt or a shred of suspicion to the point where you legitimately think that there is, oh, I don't know, a 1 in 3 chance or 50-50 chance that your two colleagues under the influence of a genetically modified plant have murdered a friend of yours, you're probably going to go dump the plant that's in your... What?
Landed her in the hospital because she was in critical condition. Okay. So coma or something, yeah.
Okay. Attempted to murder.
Right. Attempted, yeah.
I'm thinking you're going to get the plant out of the fucking room. That's me.
Well, there's two things. I'll tell you why she didn't do it. Because the fall down the stairs was off screen, and they said it was an accident, and they had nothing to do with it. So, again, the film's obviously trying to make it unknown, ambiguous, even though we kind of know what's going on. But also, she doesn't want to believe it. And because if she believes it, she knows they probably pushed her down the stairs. She knows the plant's probably doing stuff to people and Bello the dog and all these other stuff. But and it's not because she doesn't care. I think it's because of the type of person she is. She's a narcissistic dirtbag that doesn't want to believe it, even though she knows it's true, because then she's a failure at work. The whole thing is thrown out a year's work is ruined. She didn't make the convention in the Netherlands, so she looks like an ass at work. And on and on and on. So I think it's part of her own weaknesses as a human being is the reason why she leaves the plant in little Joe in Joe's room. Never mind, you know, continue doing the work at work. So I think you're right, Mike. I think she knows everything, yet she just doesn't want to believe it. It's my point.
No, I'm trying to remember, did the gag with the kids come before or after the jump off the stairs?
Before.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, if she had come home to that, right, and then the kids played the gag on her, then that's kind of letting the air out of the balloon a bit. And she goes, oh, yeah, I'm being silly and stupid. But no, so that's the one chance she has to walk it back. And I think she does. So that explains why she doesn't deal with it then and there. But after the, air quotes, suicide... then I'm finding a little bit harder to justify her not doing anything with the plant.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't think it has anything to do with justification. I think it's the person she is. She is just a bad person. And so even though she knows her coworkers probably did what they did intentionally, and it wasn't a simple fall, an accident down the stairs, I think... she wants to protect her. That's the thing that's interesting, is that everybody else is protecting the plant because they become possessed by the pollen. But she wants to protect the plant because her career and her prestige is more important than safety. So that's another interesting thing about the film.
But I know how these things... I mean, see, I guess that's another thing, is that I know how these things work in science and... these things take years and decades to sometimes come to fruition. The idea that things may be postponed by a couple of months because of questions, you know, she didn't go to anywhere to sabotage the results.
Well, it's the convention. They want to get to the convention. You're right. Usually, years it takes, but if they have a deadline, that's the reason why she is even less or more careless.
I guess part of what bothers me is I feel like the film, she's the main character and the film wants us to feel something for her, but she's yet such a stupid character and does these really bad things that I feel nothing for her.
I found some of the parts of her, I did like some of Emily Beecham's performance. I did feel some of it was a little overly stoic. And I think maybe that kind of made her feel more robotic, maybe not intentionally. I wasn't sure if that was meant to be like that, but I think that made it hard for me to connect with her.
Right.
You know, and then it's just like, you know, I think I couldn't, you know, it's just, it was, it, I guess it may be because.
Let me ask you this, Abe. There's the stereotype of both engineers and scientists, and in some cases even doctors, is that they're stuffy, they have limited social skills, and they are loners, which may or may not be true. It may be a stereotype because it's somewhat true. But do you think they intentionally created this character to have those stereotypes of the engineer/scientist, and therefore that's why she was acting the way she did generally and was really only emotional with her son at home while at work and with quote unquote strangers, meaning people not in the immediate family, she acted different, including different when her son's girlfriend was over.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they're trying to use the archetype as the basis for the character, then that, I think that might have been a bad choice. I think it would have been more interesting to have a character outside of that. And that way, I think people could have had more of you could have been able to connect with her because, you know, and I think it also ends up working against, you know, the story, how should I say, the betrayal of her being this really smart character scientist, but she ends up making all these dumb, careless decisions that are just so amateurish. Like the very fact she doesn't put the key card or anything safe anywhere, The password was literally, as I mentioned way in the beginning, was the project they were working on. And, it could be so easy for somebody to get in there, aside from the kid, to absolutely screw around with stuff. Which kind of makes it more an issue that why it makes you wonder, like, okay, if it was that easy for a fucking, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, to break into the lab, then, why couldn't, Bella or some rival company do the same thing? If it was that easy to get in there, they had no security. Yeah. The fucking kids got in through the front gate door with no security or nothing like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. Again, this isn't high tech. I mean, me and Barrett work at a company that, you have to have a pass card and all this other stuff, and there's a certain type of data that's protected. If someone stole your card and it was off hours and it's a building that has joint, companies in it. So say it's a 6-floor building and there's 2 companies per floor. So anybody can have access to the building, walk in, get in the elevator, and then you get on floor 3, that company's on floor 3. Then you could just use the card, especially if it's at midnight and there's no security guard there. So, I mean, you'd be logged, that's for sure. But again, it's possible because this isn't federal government, military or anything like that. But your points are fair. But I think the thing is that the character is a unlikable protagonist and a very flawed protagonist, because I think that's why they have the therapy sessions and the stuff with the son, is to show how self-centered she is, and she may be smart scientist wise, but she's a moron common sense wise, because all of her flaws and makeup make her narcissistic and wants a certain prestige, doesn't want to be embarrassed, and on and on and on. So I think.
But I don't think that's narcissistic. Nobody wants to be embarrassed. She seemed fine all along to accept the results of the things that came along. She wasn't sabotaging anything. If you were doing, some big thing where you were waiting for the results to find out, does the program work or does it not work? Obviously, you're not going to be going, boy, I really hope this flunks. I kind of feel like they were leaning heavily into 2 stereotypes here, and one is sort of that emotionally awkward scientist type, and then it's the poor, put-upon woman who can't juggle work and home, and that's another part. I didn't have a problem with the character. I didn't find her unlikable. I don't know that I found anybody in the film other than the one horribly unlikable. I didn't find any of them terribly likable either. I found there was I really did find a little bit of a distance between me and the characters on screen throughout the entire film. And that made it a little hard for me to connect with them, but I didn't find anything specifically where I felt like they were making a comment with them either. This was supposed to be a bad person.
Who's the person that you didn't like?
The lunatic. I thought she was badly written.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. Right. I liked her the best because whether she's bad or not, she was the only smart person in the film. So I liked her.
Except she wasn't.
Yeah, you're right, because, well, but again, that's the problem when you need
to. She
had
smart
right?
thoughts and took no action.
She killed
right.
the
well,
dog.
She tried to, and she tried to take action, and they basically kept on shutting her down at all the meetings. And then they would finally, and then to make other people dislike her, they would say, she tried to suicide. She's had mental health issues. She's one of those people. And so I think she tried, Eric, but she failed because she got shut down. But again, what else is she going to do? Either sabotage or quit? I mean,
well, if the very prospect that these plants could overtake humanity and make them all into fucking enslaved little slaves to fucking plants, you know. I wouldn't care about my job at that point. I would try to get rid of the fucking things.
I agree, Abe. And she's most certainly on board that the plants are infecting people. But I mean, again, she's does have behavioral health issues, but I think it's more than that. I think it's if she sabotages or goes to some scientific board, she's going to get fired, I think. And I don't think she wants to get fired. That may not be a good enough excuse.
I was going to say, which makes her weak-willed.
Well, we don't even know that about her, though. We don't know that she doesn't want to get fired. We don't.
Found her from badly written as a character who's supposed to be a scientist and saying stupid things at numerous points in the film. And they made her the mouthpiece for saying things that, like, told me she, like, why? How did this woman ever get a job in a lab somewhere? You know, going back to even just the thing about
it was before she was a wackadoodle.
Yeah, I guess.
Lordy, Lord.
Well, I mean, she obviously that. Well, that's the thing is that yeah. I mean, going around telling people the planet's taken over, she's going to be looked at as a person with issues, obviously. So. I think she there was no win situation for her except the sabotage. But as you said, Eric, yeah, she's a weakling because she didn't sabotage, even though she knew what was going on. It's you can use that in real life situations all the time, though. It's like what happens if I get fired or what, you know, I mean, or, you know.
But beyond that, she even put herself in a prone position to become taken over. Even knowing what she knew, she went into that situation and got taken over.
Well, and I think that's the reason why she finally pretended that she did get taken over, because I think she would be able to figure out things and get her data better. Plus, she would be avoided from the other people that have already been taken over from bothering her anymore. And it was working. But then she finds Bello's ball, you know, underneath one of the plant tables, and then that's when she has her breakdown in the cafeteria and admits, "I was faking it. I was never taken over." And then that's when she became a true target by the other scientists who had already.
See, I thought
been.
Maybe that broke the spell somehow.
No, she actually even said, "I was faking it."
Yeah. Okay.
You know. But, well, I'll tell you one thing. If it did break the spell, that would have been a good thing, right? Because that's the question. Is it permanent?
Right.
You know, and that's we never find that out. And do you have to continuously have the pollen and keep on breathing it over and over and over? And if you've already been possessed once by it, maybe you want to smell it all the time. So, again,
that's just a weird sounding phrase. I'm sorry.
Smell it all the time.
So, well, that's, you know, just ask the people that smoke the dope. They want to smell it all the time. So, I guess that's the thing. I'm thinking that if the plant is eliminated, or removed, or destroyed, the people would go back to normal because they wouldn't smell it anymore. And I think that's another reason why they were so protective of the plant.
Well,
because
that's something that was very unclear to me and maybe could have been hammered home a little bit, because I was not at all certain whether this state was permanent or not and required additional doses of pollen.
Right. Yeah. And they could have had that moment, because when the behavioral health individual, Bella, went to
the wackadoodle?
Yeah. Went to our lead character's home to try to convince her to get on board. Alice is the lead character's. And she explained the whole situation. She explained a lot of good stuff there, but she never mentioned, like, so that's the reason we got to get rid of the plants, because then Chris and the rest of them will be good again. Or she could have said it's too late. It's probably already affected their DNA and you know, changed them permanently,
right,
or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. They could have had that one scene or moment,
yep,
where It happened, but yeah, it didn't. So, let's see. What else do we want to talk about? I will say that once it was, I'm 100% sure Alice became. I mean, it was obvious because after she has her mask removed, she gets knocked out and has her mask removed. But when she didn't have any issues being punched by a man.
Oh, God, that was another. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Because as we all know, that if you punch a woman and apologize to her later because you were horny and frustrated, it goes over so well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not only helping her out, but leaving her in the lab all night.
No, but that's not what happened. What happened was is that she, at that point, I think was on board that Bella was right because she believed they finally did something to Bella, that she was going to sabotage and kill all the plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she
was going to lower the temperature and it would kill all the plants. And Chris said, you can't do that. You're going to destroy all the work we've done. And
she
wouldn't give him back. Yeah, right, exactly. All his children, right, because he was already influenced by the plant. And she wouldn't give him the key card back to open up the thermostat to raise the temperature back to the correct temperature to keep the plants alive. And so what happens is he punches her out. So it had nothing to do with sex or being horny.
No, that's what he apologizes to her later. That's his excuse to her later.
So he's apologizing for something he didn't do.
Then. No, he did it.
No, he's apologizing with a bogus reason for doing what he did.
Right. Oh, he's apologizing. Right. Okay, gotcha. But to be honest, I don't think it would have mattered because she was already part of the plant people.
Right. It was still laughable when I was watching it.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I did appreciate the fact that they actually had the point of contact off the screen when it happened. You can still clearly see him winding up and taking a punch, but her face was not in view of the camera when it made contact, so I appreciated that.
Yeah.
So she gets knocked out, and he's not sure what to do, but then it comes to his idea. He's like, oh, I can just remove her mask and leave her here all night, and she'll breathe the pollen, and then she'll become one of the plant people, too. And that's basically what happens. Which makes sense because, I mean, if the plant's already taken over everybody, it's going to eventually take over her anyway. And it doesn't surprise me that finally somebody would suddenly think, oh, I know how we could get people possessed. Trick them, similar to what the redheaded guy did to Bella, where he was trying to get her possessed by locking her in the room, right? And so... I didn't know that. Notice that, Mike. I missed that scene when he apologized. I didn't know he was making up a bullshit excuse. I thought he was apologizing for punching her because you were trying to kill the plants. But, okay, so that's interesting. But, again, I don't think it even mattered at that point because they were all possessed. So, he could have said, something wackadoodle, and she would have said, yeah, that's fine.
I got to use the word.
Yes. let's see.
Dear.
What else do we want to talk about the film? Anything else?
Nothing.
Any scenes anyone want to bring up? What's that?
I don't want to talk about this movie anymore.
I thought it was interesting that everything that the psychologist was saying about her turned out to be true in the end, even though it was caused by the plant. Like she got rid of her child, now she's focusing on work. And all that. I just thought that was
that is
kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I don't know if that therapist was a good therapist because she kind of was.
No,
too
really...
lenient. When she said, yeah, I let my son go and I'm glad, and all this other stuff, it's like I would have been horrified. It's like, oh shit, I'm a terrible therapist. That wasn't the point. But it doesn't matter. The therapist gets the plant too, so she's gonna be gone. The plants are taking over. All right. Anything else, Mike? Anything else you want to bring up, or Abe? Anything else you want to bring up, or Barrett? Really. Anything else?
No.
Mike?
Nope. I've got really nothing more to say.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So let's before we get into our final thoughts, we got other stuff we can talk about first. So, Eric, anything you want to bring up that you've seen that's genre-related, video games, books you've been reading that are genre-related, any further things about Ian Holm or Shoemaker or anything else?
I did read that Max Brooks book, Devolution.
Oh, yeah. And it was a zombie book, was it?
No, it's not a zombie book. It's a Bigfoot book.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I thought it started out pretty. He has a particular format that he likes to use, which is diary entries, which I thought worked pretty well for World War Z, because it was multiple people's stories. But this one is just one person's story and diary entries, and I had a little trouble getting into it at first, but then it gets better towards the end of the book. So overall, I'd recommend it.
All right, very good. Anything else?
I watched The Hunt with Dan and Susie last weekend, and they enjoyed that.
Was your second time watching it?
Yeah.
Was that your second time watching
it? It was.
Okay, and did they like it?
Yes, they did.
And his wife liked it. Okay, yeah. What did you guys do? How much did you rent it for? Like, $20?
I bought it for $15.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because right. Buying it's cheaper, which is why nobody should support the money grubbing assholes charging $20 for a rental.
Yes.
And I also watched Jaws 2 for the first time in forever.
Wow.
I watch Jaws every year without fail, and just watched it recently because I finally got my 4K copy. But then I was just like, I haven't seen Jaws 2 in a long time, so I watched that again. And looked up some trivia on it and never realized while watching it in the past that Roy Scheider really did not want to do this movie, and really only did it so he could get out of his contract. So that gave me an interesting take on watching it this time. But as far as sequels go,
What do you mean? What do you mean that he was on a contract? The other guy...
He was on a two-film contract with Universal. Okay. And I think he'd left The Deer Hunter.
He was supposed to be in that. Wow.
And yeah, and Universal really wanted to do a sequel to Jaws because they made so much fucking money on Jaws. And Roy Scheider really didn't want to do it. But they were like, look, do it and we'll say that The Deer Hunter counted, and you can be done with your two-film contract, or the two films left on your contract, rather. And he was like, fine, whatever. Screw you guys. Let's get it over with.
How about that? And you said it was a pretty good as sequels go?
I mean, yeah, it's not nearly as good as the first one. And I forgot to look it up. I was going to look it up and see if John Williams did the music for Jaws 2. Because one of the things that was apparent to me when watching Jaws 2 is that the music wasn't nearly as impactful as it was in the original. I mean, the shark was decent. You still don't see it very much. let's see what else.
I watched that about, I don't remember if it was last year, Scares the Care, or the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it, and I came to the realization, that it was much worse than I had remembered. Admittedly, you know, for a long time, because I hadn't seen it since in ages, maybe since I was in high school. That was always in my mind as the second best shark movie after Jaws. And we've had so many better shark movies since then. I mean, and so many much worse movies since then.
I was going to say, I don't know if there are that many better shark movies. I would say three.
I probably do a few more than that, but I realized that basically everything new all the like the new cast, new actors, was terrible. The only thing that worked for me were anyone that came back from the first film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like any new character or the recast kids or what have you, I didn't think worked at all. It was basically the old guard who were left over, who had been touched by Spielberg. You know, those who had been touched by Spielberg were fine. You know, whether it was the mayor or the wife. Maybe that's why the kids didn't come back. Terrible. But anyway.
Wow.
that's right. The rumors. Oh, my God. About Spielberg. Yeah. Jesus.
Because I'd read that book and I was in a Bigfoot state of mind, I watched the movie Exists again, which I still think is the best Bigfoot movie ever made.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yep. So that's what I've been watching.
Talk about a low mountain to climb. Yeah, that's a...
Well, there are a lot of bad Bigfoot movies, but this one's good. And therefore, best.
Yes, that's true. Mike, that was still a funny one. Let me rephrase. A unfortunately funny one-liner, though, about Spielberg. Anyway, Epstein and all that. Anything else, Eric?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. What about yourself, Mike? Because I know you've been rewatching some stuff recently, right?
Just a little few things here and there, nothing really genre specific. We did start watching the first season of The Alienist, which is I'm pretty sure adapted from a novel, but and it's available on HBO Max. I don't know if they're coming to the second season or done two seasons and going to the third, but it's basically a procedural set in New York at the end of the 19th century, where they're trying to track down a serial killer. The setting is the novelty to it, because you're dealing with, obviously, forensic science is a very, very new thing. We've only seen two episodes, I think. They've just kind of touched on the idea of fingerprints as a new concept. And actually, there is a link between this and the next thing I was going to mention. The one name that's sticking out to me is Luke Evans is in it from Game of Thrones. So far.
Who did Luke Evans play in Game of Thrones?
Wasn't he Robb Stark?
Oh yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. He's becoming pretty big right now.
Yeah, so I'm liking it so far, but again, it's only two episodes in, I think, or maybe it's three, and it's a 10-episode season, so, you know, I'll see if it goes anywhere. I know there's at least a second season. So I'm enjoying that, and they get a good, consider for a TNT series, I think it was, creating the illusion, the atmosphere of that time and place. The other thing we just watched this afternoon.
Just a correction. Yeah, Luke Evans wasn't Robb Stark, but I know who you're talking about. But anyway, continue. I'm sorry. You kind
of. What am I thinking
there.
Of? What is it he did?
Luke Evans. He did something big.
Well, he was in Dracula.
Wasn't he in the Hobbit trilogy? Wasn't he Bard?
Right, he wasn't in Game of Thrones. What was he in?
He was in Ma recently, right? Ma.
Oh, that's right. It was in The Hobbit.
He played Bard.
That's what it was. Okay, I don't know why I was thinking of him for that.
He played Gaston in Beauty and the Beast, right?
All right, yeah. So anyway, so I apologize for that. All right. One of the other thing we watched today was the horror film that came out last year, Ma, with Octavia Spencer and Luke Evans and Julia. Oh, Christ, what's her name?
Juliette Lewis? Yeah,
Juliette Lewis, thank you. And Allison Janney in a very underwritten role, so either she was contractually obligated or she was helping out a friend or her part was severely curtailed. And it was a fun film. It's not great. I imagine if you are a teenager who's watching it, it might have a bigger impact on you because you haven't seen some of these things before. But I thought it was fun as a, you know, quick 90-minute disposable horror film. And again, that's available, I know, free to stream on HBO Max. I'm not sure who else might be carrying it. But if you have HBO or HBO Max, you might want to check that out.
Right. Now, The Alienist, unfortunately, has nothing to do with Grays, huh?
No. They start the episodes by saying that people that had were behavioral health individuals were said to be alienated from their own psyche or their own person, and therefore, like, the people that treated them were called alienists.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. All right. Anything else, Mike?
That's it off the top of my head.
All right. What about yourself, Abe? Anything?
The only thing really I've been playing Alien Isolation. It was a game I've been wanting to play for a while. It's a survival horror game, I think, that came out in 2016. It's basically part of the Alien universe where we play as Amanda Ripley, the daughter of Sigourney Weaver's character. And so basically, in this storyline, the Nostromo had somehow had a recorder recovered somehow from a giant explosion bug, whatever, that basically is being held on another space station, and Amanda is invited to go there in order to, you know, get some closure and find out what happened to her mother. And there, from there on, becomes a survival story where an alien infestation has broke out within there, and you are trying to evade a xenomorph as well as malfunctioning androids and other frightened survivors. It's kind of, there is some combat, but it's mainly a stealth game where you have to be, try to be, avoid combat as much as possible, because the alien is cannot be beaten. You can only drive it away with fire or explosions. And it's a cool game. It's kind of really nice how they brought in that old sort of retro futuristic technology that was seen in the first and second Alien films. It's really, and it's got a nice little sense of atmosphere and a cool soundtrack. But it is also one where it won't be enough for, might not be for everyone, because as I said, the main component is a stealth, where you have to be using tricks to lure enemies away or try to sneak around them. It's a fun horror game. There was a deal going on where they had the entire, all the DLC and everything available, and the game itself available for like $7. So I was like, you know, give it a shot. And it's been fun. Aside from that, not too much. I've been trying to also complete the reading for our next book reading, book podcast episode. Which I won't spoil what it's going to be, because we're doing two stories, but that'll be sometime early this next month.
All right, very good.
How far have you gotten in Alien Isolation, Abe?
I am at the point where we find out that there wasn't just one xenomorph.
Okay.
Spoiler.
Because, I mean, yeah, I found that game was some of the more one of the more intense horror games I've played in the first few chapters, because the alien is invincible.
Yeah.
And then it gets very, a little bit more action oriented towards the end, although it's still, you know, doesn't quite get like go full on aliens. But yeah, if you're a fan, you can get the game cheap now. I would highly recommend it to any alien fan.
Absolutely.
All right, yeah. If it's only like $10 or less, as you said, Abe, then I'm going to probably get it. And you can find it on PC, Xbox One, PS4, and the NS Nintendo. So, yeah, if it's only $10, I'm going to try it. And since both you and Mike said it's a solid game, I think I'm on board.
I'm going to check it out too.
Yeah, I'm going to probably buy it this weekend. Maybe start it tomorrow night.
I actually own it and have not played it yet.
Really?
Well, yeah, there was a day when I bought like four or five different games and just never got around to them all.
Right. I will say this to anybody who's listening, since I haven't said it recently. Far Cry 5. It's the best game ever. Best game ever.
I actually bought that and the sequel, Bill. Or spin-off or whatever that thing is.
Yep.
Because it was relatively cheap as a download a week or so ago. So I did buy that. I haven't played it yet, but I did buy it.
Excellent. Yeah. They've had some sales of it recently. I noticed too. Yeah, and you get it real cheap, and it's high. I recommend, because just like Alien Isolation, it's a pretty solid, top game that you can get now cheaper than the $60 that it used to be back in the day, 2 years ago, similar to Alien Isolation. And high recommend. High recommend. What about you, Barrett? Anything you want to bring up?
Over the weekend, we binge watched the second season of The Order on Netflix. It's a show about werewolves and magic users and in modern day society. It's a pretty good show. It's enjoyable.
I think I tried watching that and like tuned out halfway through the first episode.
Then it wasn't for you.
It's still going on. Is it a Netflix original, or are they just picking up reruns from another station?
I think it's a Netflix original.
Okay. Yeah, there's 20 episodes, 2 seasons so far, and the second season was released June 18th, so just a few days ago. So yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. It's getting good, decent reviews. I know what you mean, Eric. Sometimes that happens. Where a lot of shows get a big buzz and you try it and it just doesn't work. But sometimes I go back to them too. I still have to go back to a couple shows. I think I may restart The Americans, because I know you like that, Eric, and the concept is a pretty cool concept. So I gotta check some.
Yeah, there's also some shows that start out really hot and then I just lose interest. Like the Sabrina one. I was totally into Sabrina the first season and I just I'm not excited about it anymore.
Right. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. The Witcher, I watched the first 4 episodes and it was pretty solid, but for some reason I just stopped watching it. And I'll have to go back, I think. But yeah, I know what you mean, Eric. You get into it and then whatever.
Well, the worst thing is we're in the age of you got to give it for the first 23 episodes before it really gets compelling era of television. I'm guilty of that too. I've had shows that I powered through the first episode or 5 that just weren't that great, and then once everything is set up and it starts getting a lot more interesting and engaging. But it's also hard to tell when is it a show like that and when is it a show that it just sucks, or it's just not for me.
Yeah. No, and you're absolutely right. So
at this point, there is just so much content available that I'm quicker to bail than to not. I'll give something 2-3 episodes, and if it doesn't grab me, I'm out.
I even do that now with books now too. It's like there's just, like you said, there's just way too much stuff, which is a good thing. So why not just focus on the stuff that hits, really gets your attention right off the bat? I mean, you may miss some stuff, Mike said, you can chug through and it eventually turns, but again, sometimes it just may not be for you, or you have to get someone else to watch it first to really convince you, and that, someone that you have faith in their opinion, and then you say, all right, then I'll actually give it a try. So, yeah.
Oh, I just remembered something I don't think I had seen when we talked last is I watched the Netflix /BBC Dracula. And
Kevin Lech watched that too.
Yeah, it's only 3 episodes, but the episodes are about an hour and a half each, so you're talking about a 4.5-hour investment. The first episode is kind of telling the Jonathan Harker story, but it's telling it differently, and I was getting a bit of dissonance, and I wasn't really on board with their take on Dracula.
It's modern day, isn't it?
Well, the last episode is.
Okay.
Because it's a British series, Dracula is a little bit more cheeky than I'm used to. But they're also, by the time you get towards the end of that first episode, they are very much veered out of the framework of the original story. They do some interesting things, like specifically with Dracula's victims, that I liked. And then when you get to the second episode, it's a story largely set on the Demeter, like the ship that travels over to England. So that's a relatively untold story. And then the final episode is Dracula in the modern era. And there are a lot of things in there that I do end up liking more towards the end. And part of it is just grooving in how I perceive Dracula, and this is the Dracula that I like. This is the Dracula version I want, and I'm not getting that version, and being able to concept out of my head and accept their Dracula for what he is. And I think that actor at times can do a really decent and intimidating and scary Dracula, but a lot of the times he's very lighthearted, which is a little bit not what you're used to. Given that it's Netflix, and therefore doesn't cost you anything extra if you're already subscribed, I would probably recommend fans of the character give it a shot.
All right, that sounds cool. Yeah. All right. Let's see. For me, I'm still reading McCannum's novel, The Swan Song, and I have 50 pages left, so I'm about to hit it. And then once I'm finished, done that, I can start reading our next book episode stuff, as Abe's doing right now. The book is pretty solid. I can see why people compare it to The Stand, even though the apocalypse that occurs, why it occurs, it's different. Though the ending idea is kind of similar, where it's a quote-unquote good versus evil. But
is this the Judy Blume apocalypse story that you're doing?
Judy Blume. Isn't she the one that wrote Charlotte's Web or something?
She's known for writing like teenage girl stories.
Oh, right. No. This is Brian. I think his first name is Brian. Brian McCammon.
Robert McCammon.
Robert McCammon. That's it. Yeah. No, he's a well-known horror writer from big time in the 80s, especially.
Yeah, this book's been around a while. I read it in high school.
Yeah, yeah. It's considered a classic in cult horror novels, because obviously it's not as big, well-known as others, because McCammon is now a period author, you know, a 1980s and 90s author, rather than like Stephen King, who's going until he's dead. But yeah, it was a pretty big novel back in the day.
He did write a book a few years ago called The Five, which I enjoyed.
Is it good? Yeah, I heard he's switched to like fantasy now, hasn't he, or something? I don't know.
If I call it fantasy. It's different than what he used to write, though.
Oh, yeah? But it's pretty good. It's called The Five, you said?
Yeah.
All right. Maybe I'll check it out. Yeah. It's a pretty solid apocalypse and post-apocalypse novel. And the reason it's called Swan Song is one of the characters is named or nicknamed Swan. And that's where it gets its name, even if it does sound like a teenage girl novel, Mike. But yeah, high recommend. They do kill the dog, though, so fuck them. And
you really need to get over it.
Oh, I'm so pissed. It's moves real quick at the end. So what would have been multiple chapters is more condensed near the end, and without hurting the story. People should check it out. Just make sure that you know that you're reading a 1,000-page book similar to The Stand. That's pretty much about it for me. I saw a couple of films for the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Review podcast, which people can listen to on the Dark Discussions Network or search for the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews itself, because it has its own feed. And that's pretty much it for here. But before we get into our final thoughts, Eric, you actually do another podcast for your buddy Dan?
I do. It is a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And what about you, Mike? me, you, and Eric are doing a monthly podcast besides this one?
Yeah, we're doing Cinema a la Carte, and we just finished an episode covering the 1950s classic science fiction film Forbidden Planet, and we're going to be doing another more modern film, thriller, I suppose, on our next installment, so please keep your ears out for that.
Yep, absolutely. And Abe, me and you and Barrett and Kevin Letts are doing some book episodes. As we got an email today that someone says that
in a book.
That's right. They actually like the book episodes, even though we're doing stories that aren't necessarily even been made into movies. What's the one that is coming out probably next week? Even though by the time people hear this, it'll already be out.
So the next one will be The Whispers in the Dark, which is one of Lovecraft's short stories, or novellas, I would call it. And that one will be ready whenever the editing process is completed on Phil's end. After that, we have another one, as I mentioned earlier, a double feature coming in early July. We might have to push it back a little bit, but stay tuned for that one, folks. It'll be worth the wait.
Yep, excellent. With the revival of Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, only because doing it alone, I couldn't do it and had to fell apart, similar to what happened to the Horror Corridor podcast that Dustin Watson used to do, where he finally just said, I got to get someone to do it with me, otherwise I'll never do a podcast. Barrett, I mean, you've been doing a couple of Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews episodes. We just recorded four, actually, if you want to include the Voodoo one, too. Why don't you let people know those four episodes that have already been recorded?
Yeah, check them out for sure. I really enjoyed the Voodoo. I've enjoyed every single one, actually, and there are a couple movies that I wouldn't normally have watched that I watched because you had brought them up, and I actually enjoyed them way more than I thought I would. So it's good to get out of my normal horror genre once in a while.
Right. Yep. So check those out. I guess we can get into our final final thoughts of tonight's film. So Eric, why don't you start?
Yeah, I thought this movie was okay. It had good acting, good cinematography. The soundtrack was awful. I'm not mad about having watched it, but I'll probably not watch it again.
All right. Very good. Mike.
Yeah, again, I wasn't really thrilled with the film. I'm not going to say it was a bad film, because we've seen bad films, the gals. it had promise. It didn't capitalize on it. Maybe others will get, and I thought it had some interesting ideas, but maybe others will get something more out of it. I did forget to mention that when the dog bit Bella, that my wife just said, I feel bad for the dog already. We all knew where the dog was going at that point. But yeah, other than Bella, who's a good boy and didn't deserve to be put down, it just didn't really work for me. But again, hey, free on Hulu. So if you have Hulu, give it a shot.
All right, very good. Bella's Bello's passing was unfortunate. A lot of films where you see a dog, you know,
it's like, oh, they're going to die.
Yeah. I think Crawl was the only film ever that we've done where a dog was in the film that didn't die. And everybody.
No, we just did one with Withered.
Withered? Oh, yeah, you're right. The dog survived. Yeah, you're right. I keep on forgetting that dog survived. Yeah. I thought it died. Yeah, you're right.
Hallelujah!
It's actually not Withered. It was called The Wretched.
The Wretched.
I can see the faults that people feel that this film has. Again, it is an art house for sure. But I think the music and the colors and the archetype of the lead actor as an engineer slash scientist type of way she acted, I think it works really good because it makes you uncomfortable. The whole film makes you uncomfortable with the cinematography, the colors, the soundtrack, and various acting. So I think that's good because that's what I was hoping for, to be uncomfortable, because that's the point of the film, or these type of films, genre films. So I think that works. Now, again, there's no action, and you kind of know what the mystery is right from the beginning. And it's slow because, again, it's art house. But, again, art house and drama always work for me, and I love those type of films more than any type of film. So having our science fiction slash horror type plot in that type of film is definitely my type of film. So a big recommend, but only if you like those type of films. And it'll probably be in my top 20 for sure, whether it's in the top 10 or lower, I'm not sure. But it's a pretty solid film, I think. Abe?
So overall, yeah, I didn't hate the film, but I wasn't really enthralled. I thought some of the performances were pretty good. Some shots were pretty nice. I detest the soundtrack. I thought the choice of music was absolutely abysmal. Yeah, exactly. Fucking drill the barking dogs and all that. That was awful. I did think some of the color choices were really nice as well, but I felt I couldn't really connect to the characters. I don't think they were all that well written, and I felt that some of the decisions they made in the narrative were really just stupid and really almost. It just kind of took me out of the story. That being said, it's not the worst film of the year. It's not a bad movie. It's not anywhere near the level of some of the trash we've had to sit through in the past. Dave Made a Maze.
God, it's terrible.
But, you know, this is a film that I think might some folks might enjoy more than others. And that's always been the case on this show. So if you are still interested, whether if you just, I mean, give it a chance. If you give it a watch, it's, you know, it's on Amazon right now. It's available in other places too. And also, I have to say about it, I don't want to talk about this film no more.
All right, sounds good, Barrett.
The movie was okay. I wanted to like it as much as Phil did, but I didn't. And it had some great cinematography, some good acting. From that perspective, it's pretty well done. It's worth watching once. I probably won't ever watch it again.
All right, sounds good. So once again, this is a 2019 festival circuit film, released everywhere in 2020. Little Joe, directed by Jessica Hosner and co-written with her, Geraldine Bajard, starring Emily Beecham, Ben Whishart, and Carrie Fox. The film, once again, was nominated for awards at Cannes and played there, and was immediately picked up by Magnolia Pictures for release, at least in the U.S. And it is available on Hulu for free, as Mike said, available everywhere else that basically as what Abe said, and it's also on disc with a 30-minute interview with the director and the lead actress on stage at the festival, film festival. So if you like extras, it at least has a half-decent extra, if not, unfortunately, a director commentary, which would have been really good. So once again, Little Joe, check it out. And with that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Little Joe. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.